Hi, welcome to another episode of the Girl Unlimited podcast, the podcast dedicated to seeing you live fully, love abundantly, and be all you were created to be. Before getting into today's episode, I wanted to share something that I've kind of been pondering on, and it's particularly about this thing I've just said, which is how to live fully, love abundantly, and be all that you were created to be. Because I truly, truly believe that we can. And the question is how? And these were my thoughts. I truly believe that if we overcome fear of breaking barriers and stereotypical expectations, if we strive to maximize our unlimited potential, our limitless potential, if we focused on fulfilling our God-given purpose and probably most importantly, learn to enjoy the process and enjoy the journey, I think we'll be certainly well on our way to achieving those things. That is, live fully, love abundantly, and be all that we were created to be. Now, I know some of you might be thinking, that is an impossible altruistic goal. I truly don't think it is, but it is definitely a process. So I believe heading your life down that direction at the very least will suffice. Also, as a personal update, we finally booked our first trip in over 2 years, and it is to Budapest, or Budapest, as the Hungarian people, as I hear Hungarian people call it. And as a new home education family, we've been so excited about exposing the kids to new sites and cultures and experiences as part of their home education journey. So we are really, really, really looking forward to that. Okay, so on to today's episode. You will find my guest today quite fascinating. At least I think you will. Becky Boyland is what I call a modern day polymath. She's an academic. She has 2 theology degrees, 1 marketing degree, and has just started her doctorate. She's a musician. She's a music producer, a mastering engineer, a web designer, and a marketer, an internet marketer to be precise. Because of her thirst for knowledge, she's always working on expanding her skills and rarely says no to a challenge or a question. In fact, if she doesn't know an answer, she can't help but to find it. Within music, Becky dances and switches between genres. She has written, produced, and released music on worship, ambient, EDM. I mean, we talk a little bit about her latest project, which is an instrumental EDM EP titled Bright Life. And speaking of EDM, it was at this interview I heard the term IDM for the first time. And in case you're not aware, like I was, IDM stands for Intellectual Dance Music. And we talk a little bit about that during the interview. Honestly, this was such a cool interview where Becky just shares what drives her, what inspires her, and how she thrives spinning all these different talent buckets. My name is T. Ari, and you're listening to the Girl Unlimited podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on the Girl Unlimited podcast. How have you been?
I've been great, and I'm so excited to be here and to be part of this with you. It's just so much fun.
I'm so glad to have you on. Becky is in Illinois, in the US. Whereabouts in Illinois are you? I can't remember the name. I know it's a small town.
Well, it's Rockford, Illinois, which it perspective is everything. For most people who are not anywhere near where I am, I just say Chicagoland, because technically that is correct. But if you're a fan of A League of Their Own, good baseball movie from once upon a time. The Rockford Peaches are from Rockford, Illinois, and they were real. And so they're still, you know, homage to them here in the city. And it used to be the second largest city in Illinois. It's now been, it's still third behind some suburb. That's just not, I don't think that's fair. Suburbs shouldn't be, you know, considered cities. But anyway, so it's a small town feel, but it's a medium sized city and right up near the Wisconsin border.
Nice. So guys, the first time I met Becky is a few years ago now, and I remember thinking she was just all kinds of cool simply because she was a music producer, and I personally hadn't met a lot of female music producers. Then again, later on, as I got to know her a bit better, I found out that she was this academic as well. And I was like, oh my goodness, you know, just different facets. And I'm sure you're going to hear a lot about those different facets that make up Becky Boylan. So I will let her do the talking. So I usually like to start with this trip down memory lane. So what was it like for you growing up? And was there anything in your childhood that gave any indication of where you are right now?
Well, I am the baby of the family. So some people will say that tells you everything you need to know right there. But there's a pretty good gap in years between myself and my oldest sister. And then my middle sister is a little bit closer in age to me, but I was precocious. I'm sure I was incredibly annoying to everybody, but I had things to do and places to go and people to see, I think probably from the time I just started talking, which I'm sure was pretty early on too, but I couldn't wait to go to school. I couldn't wait to, you know, to learn to read. And I'm so glad that I actually grew up in New York State, and I'm so glad that I did, because my school started in September, but you could start that year if you turned five. You could get into kindergarten even if your birthday was pushing the end of the year. And where I live now, the kids, if they're after that cutoff date, which I think is like September 1st, then they have to wait a whole year. And my birthday is September 2nd. So yeah, if I had had to wait a whole year because of one day, I think I would have been the most frustrated five-year-old known to mankind. So I love getting into school. And there was one other girl in my class that was really thriving. And so they took her out of the class a couple of times a week to go to a reading class so she could learn to read. And the school I was in, you didn't learn to read until first grade. So I was so jealous. I was like, I want to learn to read. That's not fair. And back in the day, that's just kind of how it was done. So I had to wait, but I just sat there and just, you know, cause they bring her back in and they make her read to us. And I was, it was torture for me because I couldn't do that too. Eventually obviously got my chance. And by the time we graduated from high school, I was valedictorian. So I took care of business, but when
you
I
made
was,
her pay.
I did. When I was, I can't remember if it was kindergarten or first grade, I came home one day and started singing the song that we had learned that day, which was "The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow" from Annie. And that's when my mom realized that I could carry a tune. And, but that was short-lived because I kept singing the song and everybody wanted me to stop, but she did note that. And so she kept an eye out for that as I got older and got into music and had opportunities there because she could tell that there was something that was going to take flight.
Wow. Isn't it funny? So, I mean, guys, Becky can more than hold a tune. I mean, she plays, I know she definitely plays the guitar. She plays multiple instruments. So it's not just the voice that's an instrument for her. So it's amazing to see how you, I mean, I don't know any kid personally who cries, not, you know, because they didn't get an opportunity to read. I mean, I couldn't stand school for, I mean, any opportunity to miss school, I would take it. And if I had to wait a year, I mean, in this country, in the UK, you will have to wait a year. And I do know a couple of kids, unfortunately, whose birthdays fall, you know, so we're both September babies. And their birthdays fall in September and they have to wait a year. And I am one of those kids that would have been really glad to wait the year if it meant I could daydream all day. But yeah, I think that's amazing. So, I mean, one thing is obvious. You're a lifelong learner. Like I just said, I mean, I would prefer, I have one degree, but I know a lot of people who, I mean, don't even have that. But you're counting at least three. What are those degrees, yeah, first of all?
Well, my bachelor's is in Bible and Educational Ministries. I actually had all these ambitions to go and study music. I was a trumpet player. And I realized, though, when I was probably when I was a senior in high school, that there are two types of musicians when it comes to those kinds of more classical instruments. There are those who must major in music, and those who really should not major in music. And for me, in that context and with that instrument, to go through the rigor of majoring in it would have killed everything, all the passion that I had for it. Well, it kind of started with when I first started playing, because we had a substitute band director that year. My band director, that was the advantage of growing up in a small town. I had my band director for like 7 years. But my first year in band in late elementary school, she was out for that year. And so the sub that we had, he did a really great job, but between him and my private lesson teacher, the two of them wanted to claim all the credit for what I was accomplishing. And so they kept pushing me and pushing me and pushing me. So I almost just burnt out on playing right from the start. So I'm so grateful that I was able to, you know, push past that and love what I was doing. But I eventually realized I better not try to kill all the passion, you know, with this. And it was great too, because I probably wouldn't have learned guitar. I wouldn't have had time. My spiritual journey just launched when I was late in high school, and so that's the direction that I really felt called to go. And so I studied Bible and Educational Ministries. I was a Greek minor because I studied a lot of Spanish and loved languages, but tested out of Spanish and then had to pick up another language. And I'm like, well, I'll pick up Greek because I'm going to study the Bible. I almost every semester of college I took way too, I had to get special credits to take extra credits, like special permission to take extra credits, because they had all this energy. And now I look back on it and I'm like, wow, that was really cool to have all that energy that I don't have anymore. But I went straight from my bachelor's into my first master's, which was also educational ministries. And then I served in church positions for many years, and always had to have something else on the side. That's very common when you're in ministry, you always have to have another, you know, thing. And I often ended up in some type of marketing. There was a time when I felt like, okay, well, how can I expand on all of this? Because I started to realize that it was all just communication. And I love that. So whether I was ministering to a congregation in a church, or creating mailing pieces for marketing, or building a website, or any of those things, then, you know, it's still, there were buckets that I could put that all together and say, this is communication. So I ended up going back and doing a master's in internet marketing. And that too has served very, very well. And so then just last month started my doctorate in worship studies. And so I zigzag back and forth, but they're all kind of, you know, interrelated. I did a couple of studies online a few years ago with Berklee School of Music in Boston, but they weren't degrees, they were just certificates. So I still put them on my resume, but they're not degrees.
What drives you to keep studying? I'm just intrigued, because I know there are people like that, but I mean, you are probably the first person that I've had the opportunity to ask directly, what drives you to keep studying? So especially formal, I mean, I know we are supposed to keep learning and, you know, I mean, I regard myself a lifelong learner as well, but not necessarily in the academic fields or in the formal setting. So what drives you to keep studying in such a way?
I think it's, I don't know if it's a side effect of being called a know-it-all. No, it's not really that. I've always had this drive and this passion to know it all, and I just want to know all the things. And I remember when I was in my first master's program, one of the professors pointed out that knowledge doubles about every 7 years. Now, this is a while ago, so that was accurate then. That is no longer accurate. It's more like, you know, once a year at this point.
Yeah.
But it got me realizing that within that span of time of me doing my undergrad and my graduate program was not quite that 7 years, but in that amount of time, knowledge had just about doubled. And I literally went into a moment of depression that I can't learn all the things because all the things that I've learned already are only just still a portion of all the things. And now there's twice as much out there. And it was just this little moment of devastation. And I'm not really sure why it is that I just love to have a ready answer for just about everything. And I've been called walking Google. I've received phone calls from friends asking me to Google things, and I remind them that it's free. They can do that. You don't require any kind of special dispensation to be able to use it.
Maybe you should stop paying. They should stop paying for that.
Yes, there's another entrepreneurial task I can take on, but I do. I'm a researcher. I've said I research things to death. If I want to buy a new product, I will look at just about every website. Google did a study probably about going on 10 years ago now that, if not more, that people will research have about 9 to 10 different contact points before they make any kind of buying decision. But that's not just online. They could call their friends. They could see something in a store. There's still all these different things, but that was a long time ago now. So who knows what that number is? If you were to do the data, they haven't released a new study on that. But I probably make up the large proportion of the percentage of that. You know, I skew the metrics on that because I will look at everything out there. But I've always wanted to know all the details, and so when I say I have serial hobbies. When I'm really obsessed about a project that I'm working on, I really will dive in and learn everything that I can, which can be dangerous because sometimes you learn to the extent of paralysis where I've learned all the things and now I feel in my mind I can't possibly measure up to that. Or I go down a rabbit trail and get stuck with something that's just a small element of it instead of actually just doing the thing. Yeah. And so it's, there are challenges and potential disadvantages and downfalls with that kind of thing. But it really does kind of get me jazzed up when it's like, oh, I know about that. And I've had to do client work for, you know, industries that were completely unrelated to anything I'd ever done. And, you know, it's one of those things where you walk into a gathering or a party at somebody's house and you're like, I'll be darned, somebody actually works in that industry, and they start talking about it and I can actually have a conversation about it. And it gets me a little bit excited, but I have to know all the things. I think that's the bottom line.
I hear you. I know from personal experience of knowing you, I know that you are like a walking encyclopedia, if I could call it that way, because you always have, there's always something you know about. And I, I guess I am sort of similar, maybe not to the intensity that you are, but I'm sort of similar where I like to know a little bit. I mean, everybody kind of knows me to know a little bit about a lot of things. I've been doing this, I don't know what I would call it, study on, well, I found this group of people, if and I've mentioned it in some of my past interviews, where specifically the works of an author. She passed away last year, called Barbara Sher. Actually, the book that I stumbled on that of hers that caught my attention was this. It was titled "Refuse to Choose," and I found that very intriguing because I was like, I know I sometimes have a very I find it really difficult, you know, choosing, because there's so many things I want to learn. There's so many things I want to know. And she's saying, you don't have to choose, do them all. And I was like, really? So I went down this, I guess, rabbit trail of finding out what she was, you know, what she was on about. And, you know, and you know, there's this group of people that she calls scanners who, you know, start a lot of things, or they know a lot about a lot of things. And in some schools of thought, they call them jack of all trades and master of none. But you know, that saying is not complete. There's a third part. But she says that it's really that at a time back in the day, there was actually nothing wrong with being a jack of all trades, because you were like a generalist. You know a lot of things, unlike the specialist. Nothing wrong with being a specialist either, but you know a lot about a lot of things, so you can fit into so many spheres and so many industries and so in terms of work or businesses or conversations. It can be something as simple as a conversation, like you said, going to a party, or, you know, and just having, you can have different types of conversations with different people. So I totally get you, and I feel you on that. So in terms of your time now, so how do you manage your time between, obviously, you're studying right now, you've started a doctorate, right? So, and then your music, and then your web design / internet marketing work. So how do you manage your time? And I know you're also a cat mommy. So how do you manage your time between all these?
Sometimes poorly.
Fair enough.
I've, especially the last few months, been really intentional about making all that sustainable, so that I am not just, I used to, especially when I was in school and I was younger, I mean, I guess I'm still in school, but when I was in my undergrad, if I had 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go do that one thing on my checklist. But that's just not how life is at this point. And of course, I didn't have a full-time job or a more than full-time job. So there are a couple of things for me, like my calendar. I warn people that if it's not on my calendar, it's not happening. So if you want me to do something, either make sure I put it in my calendar right now, or you send me an invitation, because it's not happening if it's not in my calendar. And that's, some of that's just, you know, the sanity of my brain, but also self-preservation. But the other challenge I always had was, you know, I have these goals, and I want to spend some time in the studio, and I want to, you know, work on various little projects and all that. So I would end up with lists everywhere, but they had a way to slot these into life. And they also had no ramifications if they didn't happen, aside from, oh, it's still on my list. So I would try various apps where you're trying to keep a streak of, you know, things, and really what those were a great way to create, again, huge grief, because you break a streak and they make a big deal out of it. You know, it's not like, that's okay, you get it tomorrow, you know, like instead it's like, your streak is broken, you now started at one, and I'm like, but I only had one, and so now I start over again at one. But the worst thing about those kinds of things too, is that you could have a streak of 364, and if you missed 365, and in some apps you can't go back and fix it if you did it, but it didn't, you know, you didn't record it that day. Really? So it's the worst thing ever. Yeah. Or at least, wow, they don't make it easy. Okay. And so it's the worst thing ever, because you then get to, you've held this streak for a year, and then it breaks and now you're back at one. And it feels like punishment. So you never want to start another streak. So I thought, I've got to find a different solution for this.
Yeah.
So I found an app and I'm not paid for this. It's called Productive. It's iOS only. But what I love about it is I can say, these are the 5 things I want to do, or 10 things, or whatever it is that I want to do every day. Or I can even be really fancy with it, you know, like I want 3 times a week or whatever it is. But you can set that goal in a broader sense. And then, yeah, there's, you know, there's a little bit of emotional padding on the back when you do, you know, complete all the
who
goals.
Who doesn't like some emotional,
you know, yeah, you're
gonna keep, I mean, yeah,
exactly, you're gonna still keep that streak kind of thing going. But the great thing about it is that what I had tried to do years ago was, oh, I need 15 minutes in the studio and I need to play guitar and I need to do all these different things. And I'd try and put them on my calendar because people would say, we have to schedule that in. Well, then when life happens and then you've got to either skip it or move it because it's movable. That's the whole point, mm-hmm. You know, it's movable. But you'd end up in a situation where, again, it was just this guilt of like, oh, I didn't get this done, or I'm just going to skip it. And then you started, I don't know, but some people can go back and kind of self-correct. I start ignoring the white noise of constant notifications. So I can't have things giving me consistent notifications because I will literally look at the notification and be like, oh, that's something I can ignore, which is not helpful at all. So with Productive, I like the workflow. It works the way my brain works. I have those 5 things I want. I can slot them into parts of the day, whether it's afternoon or morning or whatever. But if I don't get them done at the time when it's in there, no big deal. I get it done later. And then I have it notify me. The one notification I know is coming is at 8 o'clock at night. It's just a recap, you know, here's where you're at. And it reminds me to go in and make sure I checked off the things, or remember, oh yeah, that's right, I want to get in a, you know, 15 minute vocal warm up or whatever it is. And so I don't have the guilt associated with trying to maintain that. It's really the non-timed calendar to go along with the calendar, and it keeps me consistent. So some of the goals that I've set, you know, to practice an instrument or whatever, I've now kept those consistently for 4 months, where that had never been the case before. So I had to hunt and find the thing that actually worked the way that my brain worked. And I had found recommendations from some other folks who are really good at doing these kinds of organizational things for themselves. And one person that I was following their content, they're like, well, and I do this on paper and I get out my ruler and I make these lines, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, nope, that's not going to work for me. And there was a Facebook group with it, and somebody created a similar concept but did it in Excel, and I'm like, okay, I'm getting warmer,
because I know you're not a paper and pen type of girl.
No, so. Not at all. And so Excel was closer, but then I'm like, yes, I have Excel on my phone, but it's not, it's way better on, you know, on the computer. So I had to find an app solution.
Yeah.
And so I think I tried most of them, and I was pleasantly surprised that it was my workflow. And in fact, it's a subscription base, and so I ended up subscribing to it, which it takes a lot to get me to jump over the, you know, and make that leap on some of those things, because I just don't want that recurring bill. But it's been absolutely worth it because it was attuned to my brain, and that's the most important thing, is that there will be tons of people out there who will say, you have to do it this way, and you have to find the principle. Mm-hmm. What is the principle, and what's your goal? So what's the path to get to your goal? And then find the way to take their principle to meet your goal that actually works with the way you're wired. And then you actually accomplish it. It actually works and continues to support what you're trying to do.
I love that. And while you were talking, I actually wrote down that, you know, the balance is a myth. So, you know, you hear all this, you know, work-life balance. I actually read some article probably last week or this week, I can't remember, and just talking about, I think the actual words the person uses, work-life balance is stupid, and I was like, it doesn't get any more in your face than that. But I wrote down, I said, it's actually true. So we all trying to find this balance, but many times what we actually need to find, and I mean, what you just said was a tweetable moment in itself. That's, you need to find the principle and then find how it works for you. And I wrote down, I said, you need to find your own rhythm. So like, I am a paper and pen girl. You're not. So obviously you then trying to do what I do, going down the paper and pen route, isn't going to work for you. And then you're just going to get frustrated and then find that, okay, well, and just say that, well, productivity doesn't work for me. But that's, when I mean productivity, I'm not obviously the app, but yeah. You know, just saying it doesn't work for me. But when really what you were supposed to do was take the principle of it. So we all know that we have to find a way that we can't master time necessarily, but we can manage. We can find a way to make it work for us. So we're not fighting against time. We're working with time and making it work for us with everything that we have to do, especially when you're the modern day Renaissance woman like you are. You have to find a way to feed all those different aspects of your life, you know, because from what I know about you and everything you've said so far, you're using both sides of your brain. So some people are using just the creative side mostly, and then some people are using just the analytical side, but you're using both because you're doing a lot of academic studying, and then you're also into music, which a lot of people I know personally don't do both. So that I think is just amazing. And it's just segued into my next question, which is, you know, so would you say with everything that you're doing now, you know, with where you are in your life right now, would you say that you are living your dream life? And if you're not, what is missing?
I think this goes really well with that question. As you were talking about work-life balance and that being stupid, and it's absolutely a myth, but you're totally right on that. Because if you think about it, balance is standing still. And so you have you do have to cover all the things over a certain amount of time. But if you're constantly trying to maintain this mythical balance, you're literally not moving. And that's how we get stuck. That's that paralysis that I don't know how to do this over here because this thing over here is you know, grabbing my attention. And the reality is go, you know, full bore in this one direction for a little while. Mm-hmm. And don't forget about this over here, you know, keep that in mind, but that's not going to get all your attention for just a little bit. So something else has to get the attention. And so where I'm at right now, I'm not in my dream life, but I'm way closer, I think, than I've ever been. And for a number of reasons. And some of it really is as simple as, you know, that productive app, man, you know, that's really helped me. And the reason why that's helped me is because now those things of, well, I want to spend more time in the studio. Well, that's not a measurable goal. Mm. I have to just do it. And how do I squeeze that in or force that in or prioritize that in while still meeting the responsibilities that are much more time sensitive? And I can sit on the couch and look at my list and be paralyzed and think, gee, I should do that more. How do I do that? And before you know it, that time sitting fretting and thinking is the amount of time I could have been doing. Mm-hmm. And so what this does is helps take all the decision making and the never ending lists and all of those things that it takes all of that out of the equation. It's sort of like Steve Jobs and his black turtlenecks. He didn't have to make it. That was one decision he didn't have to make because that's what he always wore. Mm-hmm. And so when we take away some of those decisions by just putting mechanisms in place, it really does help maximize the time without, it actually gives breathing room without it being more like, now you can cram more things back to back. It's not that. It's now I can actually breathe. And so I've worked from home for many years now. And that has its ups and downs. In one way, obviously I have so much flexibility. If I need to run to the store, I can do that. And I don't have to I don't have to be there at the same time as everybody else who's working a different set schedule. But the other thing is I'm always on. I will get work notifications at 9:30 at night. Of course, it's my choice and the priority of the project as to whether or not I deal with that. But it's something that I have to be careful of. But I will say that now that, you know, I'm trying to take control of some of these planning things, it does give me that breathing room. And there are days when I feel like, wow, I have time to do stuff. And that's a refreshing thing. But I'm starting to now elevate the priority of those things that I'm most passionate about so that I'm investing more time into those projects. And music is going to still be that, I can't say end goal, but it's a priority that I keep, you know, pushing higher and higher up to the top. So I want more of my dedicated time to be to that. So that's where I'm not quite there yet, but I'm moving in the right direction. And I think it's also been a great time over probably the last year or two of reflecting on what are the things that I really envision for the future. And I had a very long, strange conversation with somebody recently that I was just meeting, and we were talking about future dreams, and really the only things that would percolate to the top for me were music. And it took this person aback in the context of our conversation, but it gave me a little spark of insight. And yeah. I thought, ain't nothing wrong with that.
No, I totally hear you. I mean, there's something you said just a little earlier. You were talking about, you know, doing as opposed to just sitting and then trying to twiddling your thumbs and worrying and trying to decide what you should be doing. And it reminded me of this this saying, or this something I heard Tony Robbins actually say, that what makes people happy is really progress. You know, so as long as you're moving forward, as opposed to sitting and being stagnant for whatever reason, maybe because of analysis paralysis or whatever, if you're moving forward, if you are progressing, even if it's just a decimal at a given time, that tends to make people feel more fulfilled, as opposed to being stagnant, or in some cases, you know, going in a retrogression type, you know, pace type thing. You're going backwards instead. So yeah, no, I totally, and it's funny that you're talking about music, because you just released a new EP, an EDM instrumental. Now, see, guys, this girl, I honestly don't get it. So how do you move from worship music to EDM? I mean, it's interesting, but that's not what I want to talk about, because I mean, I think we've established already that, you know, you are quite multifaceted. So, you know, we're not going to belabor the fact, but you have this new EP out. It's called Bright Life. And I saw the titles and I was like, okay, so I need to ask this lady, how do you come up with your titles? And because they're not normal. I mean, I saw one particularly, Sprites Rights.
I had a feeling when you said that was gonna be the one you were gonna ask. I was like, about.
Okay, what's the story behind that?
Well, that one in particular, and is very true of most of my instrumental music. They usually start off with some kind of little hooky motif thing or rhythmic thing or something. And in many cases, with especially this type of music, it's going to be the sound of a synth. And as I was putting this one together, and this is the disadvantage of other platforms versus like SoundCloud. Because when I'm testing things out and sending things privately, I use SoundCloud because I can put all these, you know, I could put my thoughts in there of what I think this is. And so that doesn't ever get translated over to Spotify or Apple Music, or, you know, which is a bummer, because as I was going through this one, it just, the picture for me, and it starts off with a rainstorm. But the synth sounds, it was just very elven, you know. I just picture these little elves in the forest, dancing, having a party, and you know, celebrating in the rain. And but I wanted to be clever with the title. And so another word for an elf is a sprite. And then for a, you know, we think of it mostly in religious terms, but it's not just that, but you know, this party, this celebration of this rite. So sprites rites. So there was a method to the madness, but the type of EDM that I produce tends to gravitate toward ambient, or I guess I've discovered recently, IDM, intellectual dance music, which is more for listening. And I love it so much. I love that phrase so much. However, because somebody said it to me that you've really captured that very well. And I'm like, really, that's really cool. I need to look that up. And I discovered that a lot of EDM producers don't like that phrase. And I'm like, dang it. Because I would really, the critique was, well, can dumb people enjoy IDM?
Okay.
And
I get their point. Okay,
yeah, I get their point. And so it's unfortunate, but I loved that there was a name and a bucket for it. I love my buckets, you know, but if I can find another bucket, I will be very happy about that. But I love the idea though, that the concept of the genre. So whether we come up with a new title or I just lean into it, I haven't decided, but the concept was EDM designed for listening versus for the club. Because I'm not really ever, you know, I don't have the ambitions to be a club producer. That's not my style. I love the rhythm. I love so many elements about it, but I definitely get into experimental mode. And so it would be experimental ambient, in some cases down tempo. A few of the songs could technically be in the category of down tempo, but there's a journey that I'm taking the listener through, and it's very mentally visual for me. And I'm sure there are other people out there, I'm hoping, that are like me when they listen to music this way, that you have this whole mental picture of what's going on. But I'm very, very visual in my mind about things. Perfect example was sometime a year or so ago, I was getting my hair done. And while I'm just sitting under the hairdryer, I had a song I was working on, and this was a vocal song, and I was trying to figure out the lyrics and the progression of this one section, probably a bridge or something. And I literally worked out and finished the song, chord progression, the whole nine yards, in my head at the salon while I'm getting my hair done. And they're probably, anybody in the salon is probably just looking at me like, that girl's weird. Cause I'm just, you know, like in my mind, like I'm just staring straight ahead and all of this stuff is happening behind my eyes. And they're probably really wondering what's going on with me, but it was a very productive time for me.
No, I get that. I've had an experience or two like that where I literally, it's almost like, whatever passes inspiration around the whole place just decided that day is my day, and then I just literally get it all dumped on me, and I'm like, what am I gonna do with all this? Especially when I'm not in the place where I can, you know, like I do like to capture stuff in writing, and you know, I do try to have try to make sure I have a pen and notebook with me everywhere I go. Like, well, I hardly go to the salon, but because of the type of hair I have, but that's not the point here. But anywhere else, you know, that, you know, maybe, but it's a bummer when you're going on a walk, even though sometimes I take vocal notes and stuff, but I always like to write down. So I get what you're saying. So just out of interest, Becky, what ultimately keeps you going? How do you stay inspired? So we're just talking about inspiration now. And so I just thought it was a perfect segue.
That's always such a challenging question, because it can change. And right. And I think that's important too, is that because circumstances can just they can either support or invade what's going on, that it's really important to start to understand yourself, and not just sort of in the, ooh, I have to know who I am. And, you know, it's not even just about that. It's it's really, I think, understanding how you're wired and what things are going to give you energy and give you life, and what things are going to suck the life out of you. And we can't eliminate the things that are going to suck the life out of us, but we have to either have a backup plan for something that's going to recharge when other things are much, much more challenging, or we just have to understand that I need to care for myself and provide for myself in a way that's going to help me get through this time and get to, you know, get to the end goal. Now, for me as a Christ follower, it's also beyond that. It's not, that's something I have to 100% be responsible for, or that I'm, and I know that I'm not capable of always, getting through, but I live in the promise, knowing that God's going to get me through. He's going to take care of me. And when things hit me that I couldn't possibly, handle on my own, he's there. But it's also my responsibility to recognize these things about myself. This is how I am wired. And these are the things that he's called me to, and the things that are going to energize me, and also what things will be, potential hazards. I can work really, really hard on activities that will support my dreams, but sometimes end up being procrastination from my dreams. So if I'm, you know, getting new gear and installing that in my recording studio, and then by the time I'm done with that, because of course I've invaded the time of other projects that I should have been doing so that I can work really hard and get all this done right now. And then I'm like, yay, it's all done. And then I'm exhausted and don't want to sit down and do 15 minutes of music that day. Then those are the hazards and roadblocks that I have to be prepared for. And I think, especially as someone who always does want to learn and always wants to know all the answers, that I'm not going to always have all the answers.
Yeah, of course.
And that's going to be okay. And I have to, you know, not only live with that, but I have to kind of lean into that, that it's not my job. I don't have to know everything. And I don't have to be great at everything. And I, you know, all of these things that I've kind of built up into myself, because once you start down a path, it's real easy to just, you know, add all those attitudes on, that I'm just going to master everything. And if I can't do it,
surrender, then it's a place of surrender.
Yeah. And it's, once you start going that direction, you start to think too, that if I can't do it, it's not worth doing. It's not worth trying. And that's very unhealthy, especially if you start off in a progression where everything seems easy. Once you hit that first wall, I had a really hard time with that, because school came easy to me, and music came easy to me to a certain, there were certain things to a certain extent. So I could feel accomplished and look accomplished to people while still feeling kind of like an imposter. And then also recognizing that I can go pretty far and still be impressive. And then just stop short of the thing that I know is really actually going to be just outside of my league. And it was going to require more work and more effort. And I think it's very hard, not just for perfectionists in general, but for people who have, you know, in our cultures of education and the way that education is done, those who excel in school, there are studies that a lot of those people don't do very well in life. If they don't make that leap between, you know, and there's nothing wrong with excelling in school. Obviously I support that.
Of course.
Highly recommended, but it's not a one-to-one. It's not, what you accomplish in school does not mean that you're going to go out in the world and accomplish, you know, there's a lot of gaps anyway, as far as what we're learning and how to interact with people and do our work and function in a company or any of these kinds of things. But the biggest challenge, if you do start off doing really well in school, and that is, and you equate that with your value, your personal value, It gets really, really hard when you start hitting barriers of difficulty. And because the only thing I wasn't good at in a normal academic sense growing up was gym. I was not an athlete. So, and I could separate that out. You know, it's like, I'm not good at that. Just don't give me a failing grade because that's going to mess my GPA up. But it wasn't until, you know, just the things that you encounter in life and business or when you're working on a website and somebody wants a weird programming add-on and you just can't figure it out for the life of you for 2 weeks and you just want to sit and cry and you're thinking, what's wrong with me? Am I not a grown-up? But it can be especially, it's a trap, I think, for a lot of perfectionists to watch out for, that you may have an emotional, visceral reaction to finally hitting a barrier. Mm. And then you have a decision to make. Mm. Are you going to recognize that thus is common to humankind? Or are you going to, you know, are you going to let that make you pull back and then, you know, then you end up just with a whole bunch of other decisions that one simple barrier could be could be your undoing. Yeah. Or it could be the thing that pushes you to figure out, how do I succeed when it doesn't come easy? Yeah. And keep going and actually become a more well-formed, mature person in the process, because you had to get past that.
So emotional intelligence, basically growing in emotional intelligence. So how would you say that is how it's kind of worked for you in your journey so far? Because I mean, I can already hear that you are one of those perfectionists. So when you hit those roadblocks in your personal life, how do you, one of the things you said about procrastination, how do you overcome those things, you know, so those obstacles that present themselves in your path, how have you personally in your life overcome them?
Well, I'll repeat an answer. Sometimes poorly. but yes, it is a growth thing that again, it's not something you learn as a small child. Mm. unless you have that adversity, you know, starting out. You know, some kids who struggle in school can end up actually going on and doing extraordinary things because they had to figure out a way. Mm. And so I don't knock perfectionism the way a lot of people do, like, I'm a recovering perfectionist, or we have to get past our perfectionism. The world needs perfectionists. Mm. Now, yes, it can very easily be a sickness, but there are a lot of other things too that can be taken to extremes. You need people that pay attention, that have attention to detail, who want to ensure that this thing gets done. Those things are really, really important. Mm. But I think a lot of perfectionists, or there are a lot of folks who we look at their output, you know, and they haven't been productive at all, but we would never know they're perfectionists. But the reason why they haven't done anything is because they are perfectionists. Mm. And they're paralyzed by the concept that if I try that thing and I fail, then it's a self-worth, you know, thing. And so that's the thing that I have really worked on, that this doesn't have to do with, you know, who I am as a person. And I also don't think there's anything wrong necessarily, mm-hmm. can be, but necessarily with your passions being a huge part of your identity. I am a musician. I am a worship leader. I you know, all these different things, but you still have to be able to make that separation when it's most critical. Otherwise you're just going to sit in a corner someplace and, yeah, well, things didn't go my way. And
we all do that. I mean, which is why I keep coming back to emotional intelligence,
yeah,
because,
yeah,
is a level of maturity, isn't it? That, and that's not something that you arrive at in one day. It's something that you build as you grow intentionally. That is, it's something that you build as you grow, as you grow, whatever that looks like. Because I have met more emotionally intelligent 27-year-olds, and, you know, people who have left a lot wanting, and, you know, but basically children who are in their 50s. So yeah, I, right. you know, I totally get that. So, I mean, I mean, this has gone a lot longer than I even thought it was going to be, but I kind of knew it probably would, because we have that rapport, don't we? We've always had yes. that, you know, whenever we talk, and I've always enjoyed having conversations with you, because you, like I've said already, I mean, you come across, not just come across, but you are a very intelligent woman. So when we speak, I know that we're speaking from a place of, you know, not just experience, but people who love to learn and who like to share what they've learned. So, you know, I think we're the same in that. So I just want a couple of more questions. So in terms of, I know there are a lot of people, at least I'm hoping that our listeners, a majority of our listeners are people who have dreams and who want to, you know, see those dreams accomplished. I mean, I like to see the Girl Unlimited platform as a platform that is bridging dreams and fulfillment. So what sort of advice would you give to people who are chasing their dreams on their own terms?
Let me contextualize it to, you know, if you're starting a business and you're trying to make a living off of this dream, is there's this temptation to get out there and do whatever you can and scratch and claw, and that initially, because you'll hear these kinds of phrases and initially you'll think that's a great thing, but what it usually results in is you will do anything and take any amount of money just so you can get started. And if you've done your due diligence, you've mm-hmm. done your homework, and you know who you are, you know what you have to offer. Yeah, sometimes you're going to start off at a certain price point, but don't get stuck in underselling yourself, because it's going to be really hard to break that, especially if you get a long-term client and they're going to end up paying a tiny little amount of money for what you're doing. And then if your clients start talking to each other, you can't break out of that. So you're going to set yourself back a lot further. But the other part of it is accepting any client that comes your way and always saying yes. I heard recently John Acuff, his writings are so great, so definitely someone to check out, but he said, especially about getting clients, if they're a pain in the ask, they'll be a pain in the task.
Oh, wow. I love that.
And
what did you call him?
John Acuff. Last name is A-C-U-F-F. And if you're having your first conversations with a prospect and they're demanding, they're unkind, any of those kinds of things, if you have any red flags in that process when they're making the initial ask, it won't get better.
Okay.
Don't feel like you have to, you know, you don't have to work with everybody that comes your way, because it will just create trauma. I've had some very challenging situations, and it does not get better if it if it starts off poorly. It can get abusive, to the point where, you know, you have to snap too and just meet that need. And that's, life's too short for that. And there are too many other good clients out there for that. But whatever it is that your dream is, it's okay to not just think of your dreams as, I have to be, well, I've heard many times people say, you know, Beyonce big, or, you know, or you just have to give everything away. And so that's not original to me. I'm borrowing that phrase, but whatever it is that you dream of, there are many different ways to accomplish that dream. So think of it as a category, not as a destination. And so if your passion is music, there are lots of different ways to be in the music business for yourself that will still be extremely satisfying and very gratifying and very beneficial, that don't have to look like the very limited number of paths that we're presented with. if you want to be a writer, if you want to, whatever your goals and your passions are, there are so many different ways. So that's where you do your homework. You've done the work, you know, you've practiced your instrument. You've been writing daily in your journals. You've been making wonderful culinary treats for your friends and family, mm-hmm. whatever your passions are. You've done that homework and you'll continue to do that homework. But the next part of the homework is, what are the many myriad ways that I can do this? And to not feel like I'm only allowed to do this as a side gig. Because music is the perfect example. Everywhere you go, every store you walk into, outside every Starbucks you go past, every show you watch on TV, every aspect of life has a soundtrack.
Absolutely.
And people paid good money for that soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And of course, along with that soundtrack, we can all look back to our childhood, our teens, our 20s, special moments in life, weddings and vacations, all kinds of things. And we have a soundtrack embedded in our brains for
Absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So there's value in, there's social, societal value to this resource. Mm. And for you to have the time to dedicate to doing this, whatever that resource is that you're putting out there, if it's in the creative space, it's not an optional thing. It's not just a hobby. It's not just a side gig. It is a beneficial psychosocial value that aesthetics are healthy. Mm. It is a need. It is something that we need. Mm. So consider that when you're sitting in your corner looking at your long list and wanting to do things, that, hey, I have something to offer. I have something that people actually will benefit from. Mm. And there's a value, there's a monetary value to that, because the simple fact is you have to live, you have to eat, mm-hmm. you have to have the resources to be able to create the thing that we need.
I hear you. And it's leading with that benefit, isn't it? So just as the last question to ask, as you probably know, I'm going to ask, I mean, people have heard you, they've listened to your wisdom. They want to reach out to you. You know, if you'd like people to connect with you, Becky, where can they find you?
You can check out my website, beckyboylan.com, and launching soon, or maybe by the time this is out, 9020tracks.com, which is 9020tracks.com, is my new mastering studio that is coming out. It's website's in beta at this point, so it's live, but you have to wait for the behind the scenes access. So that will be my hub for production and mixing and mastering and other wonderful studio source resources. And I'm on all the things. You can still find me and reach out to me through Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all of those places, but really good hub is beckyboylan.com.
Perfect. You guys, the show notes are going to contain everything. So if you are interested in mastering, I mean, when you just mentioned the mastering, I was like, wow, okay. Because I know that's something I personally would be interested in. So, but like she rightly said, you know, beckyboylan.com is going to be totally live by the time this episode is out. So please check her out. She's doing amazing things in the interweb. And I've just been, my life has been richer having you in it. So thank you.
Oh, me too. Absolutely.
Thanks for coming on the Girl Unlimited podcast, Becky.
Thank you so much for having me.
You, my friend, are a total rock legend for listening to this episode to the end. I hope you found value in it. And if you did, would you do me a quick favor? Would you rate and review this podcast on the platform you're listening? And if the platform you're listening doesn't have the facility to rate and review, then please share the episode with your friends and your loved ones. It would go such a long way in helping spread the word of this podcast. And until next time, remember, you're a unique, remarkably created person with a God-given purpose and unlimited potential. The question is, what are you going to do about it?
That nothing will become of me, that I'll never come to anything but I rise. Yes, you might have given up on me, 'cause you couldn't see what I'm stronger.